The White House has chosen a group of 24 federal employees to offer advice on potential changes to the senior executive service. They come from many facets of the government. Their mission is to improve the way senior executives are recruited, hired, developed, and retained. Well, will they be successful? John Palguda is the Vice President for Policy at the Partnership for Public Service. He joins me now with his take. John, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
And knowing you, John, I'll bet you are optimistic for this new group of 24.
Well, I am, Tom, but I always try to temper my optimism with a little reality check. So let me tell you what I see here. First of all, just setting the stage, we have about 2.1 million federal employees, civilian employees, not counting Postal Service or military, and only 7,000 of those 2.1 million are members of the senior executive service. So it's a very relatively small but a very important group that has been somewhat beleaguered, shall we say, over the last few years. We see that folks are leaving the SES. A decreasing numbers of individuals are interested in even thinking about becoming a senior executive. And we know from the annual Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that employee perceptions of their senior leaders are in decline. So we've got, the president has taken notice. He has established this advisory group of 24 individuals. Are they going to get something done? D.C. has more than its fair share of cynics who might say, oh, another advisory group, window dressing, it's not going to get anything done. And I will beg to differ, at least in terms of the probability. I think there's four reasons why this committee can get something accomplished, and there's two reasons why they may have some difficulties.
All right, let's start with the first four good reasons why they might succeed.
Okay. So, and keep in mind, Tom, I'm a former member of the senior executive service, so I'm kind of looking at this with particular interest. But first reason why this committee might get something done is that these are not folks from outside of government who are coming in to say, if you just act more like my company or the private sector, things are going to be better. These are insiders. These are people who have lived within government. Some of them are senior executives, not all of them are. But I think they have some inside knowledge and experience, which is going to be very helpful. That's number one. Number two, we have a burning platform. As I said, we have an increased outflow of experienced senior executives, most of them really exceptional folks. And we have fewer folks interested in filling in behind them for a variety of reasons. Basically, the challenges and the obligations and responsibilities simply aren't worth it. So the burning platform is another reason why I think there's renewed interest and a chance that this committee is going to get something done.
That's almost like Golda Meir telling Joe Biden many years ago, we've got nowhere else to go, so we've got to stand our ground here.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Third reason, I think, anytime you talk about change, there's always folks who are going to resist change. And in this case, sometimes it's not because they don't believe change is needed, but they think that if we change from the status quo, it's only going to get worse in this environment. However, we see that things are actually being changed on an ad hoc basis. Just take a look at what's gone on for the senior executives at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think people, therefore, who would normally argue for the status quo might actually be more willing to consider some changes because they figure it's going to be better than nitpicking different things that may not be as good as they might be. And the fourth reason, Tom, is that where I think this group might actually get something done is there's a growing consensus that we can do better in the way we manage our top career leadership in government. I've been around a long time. One study, one report, and we've done our fair share here at the Partnership for Public Service, that doesn't change anything. But when you put it all together, the weight of the evidence will eventually cause some change. So those are my four major reasons why I think this committee might do something. And let me say, I know several members of the committee.
Well, that was my question, too.
I have a lot of respect for them.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, too. Let me just billboard you. John Palguda is the vice president for policy at the Partnership for Public Service. And before we get to the people, you said there's two cautionary reasons
yes.
that we need to know about that could impede the success here.
So two big obstacles, Tom. First of all, if any of the recommendations from this committee involve changes to the underlying law, and personally, I think the law can be amended. This was put into place, senior executive service, in 1978. I was in government then. We had good plans, good ideas, but, a lot of time has changed, and we've seen that not all of those original plans have worked. So if we need a change to some parts of the law, getting Congress to agree to change almost anything these days is a huge challenge. So that's number one, why this could be problematic. Number two is that if any changes involve an increase in funding, in this environment, again, a big challenge. And to say that, anything could be changed without at least a one-time investment in that change, I don't think is realistic. So those are my two reasons why this could be problematic.
All right. So, because anything in touching Congress because it puts it all up in the air there. You said you know a couple of the people. Who do you know? And give us a little bit of background about them.
I
know, too.
Well, is someone I consider a friend. He's the deputy commissioner for HR at Social Security Administration, their chief human capital officer. When they created the senior executive, chief human capital officer position back in about 2002, he was the only remaining original chief human capital officer. And he's worked in HHS as well as SSA. He's been in HR and non-HR. So he's, I think, one example of someone who brings a lot to the table. And then you've got a counterpart in John Gill, who's the chief human capital officer at Health and Human Services. And John has spent most of his career outside of government. So this is, he's in government now. He's a chief human capital officer, but he's someone who brings a fresh perspective. But he's living the role. You've got Tim Curry at OPM, who's one of their experts in labor relations. Arlise Upton Key at Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, an organization that was very lowly ranked years ago in the Best Places to Work rankings, and they were able to become a number one ranked agency in their size category. So, and you go through the 24, there's some really good folks there. There's folks from Secret Service.
Well, they've got a good mix of independent and cabinet agencies and also DOD and civilian, which I think is a wise way to go, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Tom, this is a little bit like, picking the winning bracket in March Madness. The number of things have to fall into place, but you don't have to have a perfect bracket. I mean, that the odds of that are astronomical. You just have to be better than everybody else. But in terms of handicapping this, I think there's in my view, there's a better than 50% chance that this new SCS advisory group is going to actually be able to do something to improve the senior executive service.
All right. You heard it here first from John Palguda, the vice president for policy at the Partnership for Public Service. As always, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Tom.